kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I have not murdered any of my family members
yet. That is a positive. That is definitely a positive.
We're getting there. We're doing fine. Everything's fine.
Everything is fine and wonderful. Life is fantastic right now. There's nothing going on in the world that's holding anybody down or keeping us locked up or anything. The world is great right now, and it is so great that we have company. We have company to talk about how good life is right now. Purnell's here, Chris is here, Tim Ekibis is here. How's everybody doing?
I've killed
everybody's talking at the same time.
I'm good.
I am well, thank you for asking.
Don't tell anyone though, seriously. Like if I like, no one can know.
Well,
I'm literally not sure about my family right now.
Maya, what's up on your end of the woods?
Oh, I don't know. They just don't live near me, so I don't know what's up with them.
There's ways to find them.
Like, send a text and be like, "Hey, you die."
But I'm on a podcast right now.
Give them a shout out. They'll hear it.
Not texting and driving. You can text and podcast.
Yeah, how many times do you play games during the show?
He's doing
Listen,
it
if
right
they
now.
Want to come to my Animal Crossing town, they can.
Oh, mercy.
I leave it open for a while.
Okay, so who all has Animal Crossing?
Oh, I do.
I do. I'll admit I probably have played it the least of everyone here.
No, just by you probably time. Played it more than Cole.
Yeah.
Really?
I don't have it. I don't have it.
Why does it count if you don't have it?
The girls want it, but I do not have it yet.
It has achievements, Cole.
No, it doesn't. Yes, you're lying.
It does. It has an in-game achievement system.
That doesn't count for my gamer score.
It's addictive, though.
It's your gamer score of life. Go fishing.
You get Nook Miles. You get Nook Miles, and you can redeem them for stuff in-game.
But I could go play my time at Porsche and get achievements for Xbox.
But you can't get anything in-game for it.
What was it you unlock with them?
My time at Porsche, though.
The new Animal Crossing's weird because it's kind of like now you're in like, you know, a town owned by the owner of the business, you know, like a kind of a Pullman mine situation.
Is it weird?
It's it is weird. How that
plays, like, or is it weird because it's now too real?
I like to decide to go off and go ahead.
I was going to say you get paid in raccoon cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
I just kind of laughed at the fact that you get to the island. It's like, hey, you're going on vacation. Sounds like a great time. It's like, all right, cool. This is a fun time here. Set up your tit. This is a cool tit. I like it. Thank you. Oh, here's your bill.
Oh, you thought this was going to be free? Well, now that you're on this island, I guess you have no choice but to pay me and make decisions.
By the way, I blew up the boat.
I like how it's like, oh, you're going on vacation, you live here now.
It's so devious.
I mean, that's how some people are, you know, some people are stuck out there right now.
That's how I wound up here. My husband's like, hey, you want to go for a hike, and I'm like, sure, and then I never got to leave 16 years later.
Get in there.
She's been doing this podcast as a call for help for years now, just waiting for someone to,
like,
to catch
why
on
you guys, we have to pump in the sunshine, do you think I'm here voluntarily?
She just keeps blinking twice but no one can see.
I wasn't originally a ginger. It's just from being stuck in these hills.
The hills have eyes. They're Cole's eyes.
Oh my god.
That laugh.
What is wrong with us?
We are sleepy and caffeinated. Somehow that doesn't make sense.
No.
Oh, I'm not caffeinated. I am medicated, but I am not caffeinated.
I am getting
that is also a valid answer.
I've had much Vicodin.
I want caffeine.
I want taquitos.
I have Dr. Pepper.
So do I with cream soda.
Yo, you're a bitch.
It's damn. Good. It's good. I like it.
Pernilla, you mail had me it yet? Some, but like disinfect it first. Soda?
Yeah.
I did have. I actually have one bottle in the fridge for like a I need to get for like a rainy day of sorts. Like I want to drink.
It's
this bottle.
Raining now. It's gonna rain like six of the next 7 days.
Drink no, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, rainy day. You know, rainy day situation. I'm, like, there's a lot of.
We're quarantined across the whole country.
How look, I don't own the Dr. Pepper company, Cole. I can't just get Dr. Pepper funneled into my house every day. I gotta
I pick can't either because they took my pump and used it for sunshine.
I gotta pick and use my consumptions here. I can't just like drink it every day. Oh, it's a rainy day somewhere, everywhere. Drink up. I can't top of that.
It's not only been rainy here yesterday, we had fucking snow.
Oh, yep. No.
It was 75 last week, and we had snow yesterday.
I've been honestly, out here planting my garden. Get the fuck out of here with snow.
I like how because of climate change, now everyone gets to experience Western New York weather. Call me when you get that in the same day.
It genuinely sucks. I'm like, I refuse to turn my heat back on. Once it's off, it stays off. So my house is like in the like low 50s now. I'm like, I don't give a shit. Do this.
Tim, you were at my wedding. You remember how fucked up the weather was for my wedding. It was snowy in the morning. It was warm in the afternoon.
Peace at supper time.
Sure, I believe it.
Good hey, memories,
it was the most
huh?
important day of your life. I remember. Well, you know what I remember? You know what I remember the most about your wedding? Well, okay, I remember the cake.
Alcohol consumption.
I remember the party around that weekend. What I remember is sitting there waiting for the ceremony to start next to Alshon and him showing us an anal fisting video on his phone.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That's what I remember.
Way to remove the veil of my freaking BGM heroes here. It's like, hey, there's a cover artist. What do you? Oh,
and this, she comes.
Yep. Well, there goes that dream. You know what I mean? Now, next time I see him, I'm like, hey, man, I heard all about. I heard a lot about you. I haven't seen it, but by the way, the anal fisting video. What was it?
Oh my God! Of course, Sean would do that. Jesus Christ!
At a wedding, he's like, I got to make this sacrilegious somehow. Come on, man, give me.
No,
give
don't me. Worry. It wasn't in
oh,
a church.
We made up a song about the stats on a hypothetical leather belt that was sung to the tune of the Mario Land music. That weekend, I think that was Shale Riley's doing.
Shale has done a lot of crazy music stuff.
Has he? Yeah. I know that.
Believe it or not.
I know what he does.
Oh, man. Speaking of doing things, we got some games to talk about. Are you guys ready to talk reviews?
Nope.
Yeah.
Sure.
I just burped, so I should be good now.
Pernell, you better be ready because you're starting things off.
No one told me they'd be starting.
You knew it was happening.
The biggest release of the week.
Yeah, you do.
Wait, say that again.
I said you might have the biggest release of the week.
Oh, dear God. Don't do this to me. Don't do this to me. Week.
What's wrong?
Week.
What's wrong?
What's wrong? Well, I guess the second biggest Animal Crossing, but we're not reviewing that. Well, we already talked about that. So.
Oh, I love Animal Crossing.
I caught like 15 tarantulas earlier tonight.
Really? Did you go to Tarantula Island?
I just went to an island.
Wait, there's islands in the game?
Whoa, okay. That's kind of... Okay, hot tip. So yeah, I went to an island, and it turns out only two types of bugs spawn on the island, wharf roaches and tarantulas. And it's not a very big island, so if it's wharf roaches, you just, I don't know, you step on them to scare them away. And then probably the next thing that's going to spawn is a tarantula. And what I did is I made a holes in like a little square on one far side of the island. So the tarantulas would chase me over there. I would jump over the hole to the center, and then they would madly scramble around the edge trying to get at me. And then I'd be able to catch their ass.
Oh, that is smart.
Pro strats. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I'm still
you
stuck
wily
on this
bastard.
Island
thing. Hey, I feel like I remember doing that on something else in a previous Animal Crossing, but I can't remember what exactly, but yeah, it works. It will get you dem spiders. And I cleaned up and paid off my outstanding debt to Mr. Nook.
Well, and, just you wait, because he's going to have another offer you can't resist.
Oh, yeah. No, I have a much bigger and better debt coming tomorrow.
But yeah, anyway, reviews. First game to talk about this week is called Doom Eternal, not Eternal Rage.
Please do not doom me. I do not appreciate it.
Doom Eternal Rage, developed by id Software, published by Bethesda Softworks. Released March 20th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $59.99. Hell's armies have invaded Earth, become the Slayer in an epic single-player campaign to conquer demons across dimensions and stop the final destruction of humanity. The only thing they fear is you. Purnell, tell us about Doom Eternal.
Well, I can say, so Doom 2016 was a very, very popular game amongst a number of my friends. And whenever I'd ask them about why, they'd say a couple of things that would describe it. One, that it was a testosterone rush in a weird way, just because of how ridiculously action-packed it was. They'd also say that they liked the fact that it was like a very, like, very back-to-basic style of game. Get in, you kill stuff, you get through it, you're done. Right? So they were really harping on these things. So when Doom Eternal was on its way out, people were kind of like, you're going to love it. You got to try this game. And while I honestly do love it, I feel like there are a few differences that if it is any way similar to the first one, they'll come up when I describe it now. So basically pay attention to that if you were a fan of 2016 and curious about this game.
I was a fan of 2016. I'm intimately familiar with it.
Oh, well, in that case, you'll probably pick up on any differences I describe right now.
All right.
So, at its core, it is very doomy. You are the Doom Slayer. You pretty much are just... right?
Is it also gloomy?
Oh, there's a bit of gloom. Though I will admit, it's kind of cool. There's a couple like areas where it's actually not like hellscape looking.
Roomy.
Roomy with a boomy. With a mini boomy,
actually. Does it get moody?
Oh, when you turn the lights down. Oh, yeah. but basically,
we jumped the shark.
No, we haven't. We are the shark. We jump when we feel like
it. We are the shark that jumps over life.
So basically, the game kind of throws you right into the thick of it. The Doom Slayer is back on Earth. He is here to save the day. People are praying. Does anyone hear it? The Doom Marine does. And he's going to show them what he can do with murder. So what ends up happening is that the beginning of the game, you just kind of show up. You're walking through like a sort of, I want to call it a tutorial level, because they kind of walk you through a number of the basics of how the game works. But then almost immediately hit you with a pretty solid firefight that gives you a feeling of what you're in for. You have there's no run button. You just run fast by default. You have double jump, and you have a variety of weapons that you can get. You start with one, and of course you get more guns. Now, when it's working with these guns, you have their base functions, but then every once in a while throughout the game, you'll come across weapon mod stations, which when you break one open, you're allowed to unlock one of two mods that every gun has. And they kind of change, in a sense, the sub function of the gun. So for example, one of the earlier guns in the game, it's like one of the shotguns. You can fire a normal shotgun shell. The first mod allows you to fire a sticky bomb, which will attach to and blow up. And then there's like a full auto mode where you're kind of like spraying like shells, which is in its own way kind of wild. But I was happy with it. And as you find new guns, that means you now officially have two more mods to unlock when you find mod stations. And you'll be switching through a lot of those. But in addition to that, there are a few other like sub functions you get. So there is a grenade option, which you can find variations of that throughout the game, where you can just kind of lob the grenade. It does its job, whether it's like a freeze grenade or a normal grenade, and it recharges over time. There is a flamethrower that you can get, for example, which functions as the Y button. And when you press that, you spray fire on all the monsters in front of you, and they drop armor shells or armor shards while they're on fire. And honestly, it's kind of weird how that works, because you're kind of finding yourself juggling the gun usage, the flame usage, the fine throwables, I like to call them, usage. And I've seen a number of people tell me that they feel as though that's a bit too much compared to how the old game was, but I'm like, this is perfectly fine for me. I like having this variety in my combat. You can switch between your guns at will. You have the throwables. You have your sort of consumables. It's a fantastic thing. And I like the idea that you don't have to reload ever. It's just get bullets, spray those buggers. Also, the kill system that they had in the previous game that I did read about is still in place. Where the
glory kills, yeah.
Yes. I honestly love them. At first, the funny thing is, when people told me about it in the original game, I thought that when I cut the concept of glory killing an enemy, which, by the way, a glory kill is when an enemy's staggered through gunfire, you can rush them, press the glory kill button, and you get a spectacular, vicious murder animation that then spawns health. It's fantastic. It's
a fatality, basically.
Yes, it's glorious. And back when I heard about it, I was like, well, that seems kind of ridiculous. If you can get health just for killing dudes, that would make the game pretty easy. That is a lie in this case anyway, because you need it. If you're pretty much running nonstop, you can't stop moving ever, because if you do, you will get flanked and fucked over. So you're essentially constantly moving, constantly shooting dudes, constantly trying to get those stagger glory kills just to keep acquiring more oomph. And there's also another thing that I wanted to mention that I totally forgot about weapon-wise. There's a chainsaw you get. And the way the chainsaw works in this game, which I actually kind of like, is that as you're fighting guys, over time, the chainsaw fuel gauge will fill up, and you'll also occasionally find fuel canisters lying on the ground. When you attack an enemy with a chainsaw by pressing the, I guess, the B button, depending on how...
It's on Xbox, it's Y, I believe. No, wait, Y is the flamethrower, X is the chainsaw, yes.
There we go. Well, B must have been the other one. They're buttons. Okay, point is, you go to town with a chainsaw when you press that chainsaw button. The stronger the enemy, if you have the fuel for it, then you'll still be able to do it. But it takes more fuel depending on the type of enemy you're fighting. But when you chainsaw through them, it becomes a one-hit kill, and they spray tons of ammunition across the ground when that happens. So essentially, that ends up being a way for me to get out of a pinch a lot of the time, because I use the chainsaw more for ammo refills than I do for actually killing guys, which I actually kind of think is a cool mechanic in the game. It makes you kind of bounce out when it's like, okay, I need my ammo now. I'm done just kind of holding off. Chainsaw guy to replenish my stock and get back to killing.
It kind of forces you to use all of your weapons, because you drain everything, and regardless of your fuel status, you can use the chainsaw to melee kill someone, and then you refill your ammo, shoot everyone down, chainsaw someone, refill your ammo, rinse, repeat. It is satisfying.
I agree. Like, I've heard people say they don't like that. They feel like you don't have enough ammunition. I'm like, no, you got plenty of ammo, and then you chainsaw. It makes it so that you actually have to kind of play with a plane, not just kind of blindly run around shooting stuff. Though,
so I am one of those that bitched about the ammo scarcity. But that is, that leads to an issue that I had. You can't aim down sights.
No,
because your left trigger is attached to using your mods. So you can't aim down sights. And I'm a first person shooter player to the core. That is my bread and butter.
Mm-hmm.
And everything first person shooter games have ever taught me is fucking don't waste your ammo by hip firing.
Though I will say,
how Doom works.
Doom is like, you don't get to ADS, you just shooting shit everywhere and hoping for the best. Oh, by the way, there's not enough bullets for you to actually do that.
Well, I will say I was happy when you unlocked the precision mod on that one gun, which allows you to kind of at least aim down sights with that. And it fires a ridiculously powerful shot. It's almost like a sniper gun. But downside, of course, it takes like 6 bullets per shot. So it's like, woof, but it's worth it. Though, I will also say another thing about this game that's kind of wild and dicey is just the combat in general in some respects, because all the enemies you fight have weaknesses to them, whether it's a specific part on their body or a specific type of weapon that you can use on them. But ultimately, they all have weaknesses, and if you can exploit those weaknesses, you'll have an easier time killing them. Except for when you don't, because every time an arachnid demon would show up, fucking forget it, because its weakness is a tiny gun on the top of his head, and that shit is impossible to hit. Oh, no, not a grenade. If you got the precision necessarily, you can get it in one shot, but you got to hit it.
But you ain't getting it. Not easily. You're it's just wasting your hard. Ammo.
You want to know what my weakness is? My weakness is biddies because Awesome Prime just dropped 5 of them.
Oh, yay. Dude. Drop it. Delicious dude.
How was that for a segue? How was that?
Nice.
I like that. I like segues. They're very convenient. Get around town, comfortable, and cheap if you rent them.
Speaking of getting around town, Pernell, what did you think of the platforming in Doom?
Yeah.
I was honestly okay with the platforming, though I will say the platforming is perfectly fine for me when I am not stressed out.
Your garbage and your opinion on games doesn't matter anymore. No.
Hey, you hush your fuss. No. The thing about it is, like, when I think of FPSs, as far as, like, just flat out concept of platforming goes, I've never played a FPS where I was like, this platforming is excellent. I'm hopping. In fact, I still remember the days of Torak where I had to aim the sight down just to land on platforms properly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I remember.
I
think the platforming in Doom Eternal is actually pretty solid for what it is, but I hate how much it slows you down. Your progress just hits a brick wall when you run into a platforming segment, and they're frequent. And it, like, if it was just something that you could do where you were like, oh, I'm going to go do that optional platforming and get some, you know, power ups or
secrets or something like that.
But if I could pass it and just go on and keep murdering things, that'd be great. But it doesn't let you do that. You have to do the platforming to progress. And then eventually you're just like, I'm so fucking tired of trying to grab this fucking wall.
And that's the funny thing about that. It's like, well, aside from the wall, because I was actually about to say the wall drove me nuts, mainly because you had to click in the right stick to grab the wall. I wish it was a button. Very
unintuitive. Yeah,
I did not like that. But aside from that, like, for me, the platforming almost felt like a break because, like, I'm not typically one to play like a ton of FPS. Like, I play FPS games, but I'm selective about them, so that they kind of come and go here and there. So when I'm playing this game, though, this may actually just be a core trait of just these Doom games, the gameplay is very frenetic and it's very tense. So when I'm done a section, it's like, okay, now you can stop killing shit and just try to find that thing across the chasm. You can hop across these 3 pillars. You want to do that? Yes. Give me a break. Just let me hop a bit. I'm okay with it. I do hate losing health if I miss a jump, mind you, but, you know, it's almost like a bit of a breather for me. Though, I will say one thing worth mentioning, though, that I did like, though I didn't realize it until later on in my play, well, not too much later, is that there are a lot of secrets in this game that you can find. And sometimes you will turn out to have missed them. And you'll usually realize that when you discover the auto map that's hidden across each stage. When you find an auto map, it auto pops the entire map, and it also shows you icons indicating where secrets were located. The first time I saw this on the first stage and realized that, oh, I missed a secret back in near the beginning, I started the whole game over. It's like, well, I got to go back and do that. Only to then later learn that you can get a cheat code, quote-unquote code, for infinite lives, which means that restarting the game was stupid. So the quick context around that statement, whenever you beat a stage, you are welcome to return to a previously completed one in order to flush out all the secret items it has hidden within it. In addition to that, you are able to utilize any cheat codes, quote unquote, which is just a mod that you can activate that you have found hidden in the game to make that easier or more difficult for yourself. And one particular cheat code that's not all that hard to find is infinite lives. So it makes it pretty nice and convenient to go back semi-stress-free looking for fun extra stuff. Whereas normally you'd have one life unless you find extra lives hidden across the stages, which will respawn you if you die. But since they don't regenerate when you do run out of lives, they are really one-time use lives. Better make those bastards count. Unlike me, who gets shot right after it respawns me and I die again.
I wasn't expecting you to go the infinite lives route for that. I thought you were going to complain about how there's a fast travel in every mission, but you can only access it at the end of the mission.
I came across that too, but by the time I got to the fast travel part, I was like, I just want to go to the next stage. I just want to go to the next stage. That's what the next stage. And then I'm like, I'll just come back later. I'll do this later. I'm already in it.
When you go back later, though, you still have to go through the whole mission to access that fast travel again.
Oh, that's butt scrunch. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Thanks for that suffering. I'm gonna stop. But like, it's a. I mean, I will say though, it's still honestly still find the game to be pretty legit. And there's even a few little added nitbits in the game too. Because aside from the stuff we already mentioned, there's also the Sentinel cores, which when you unlock those, you can add perks and basically stat perks to your guy, where you'll get like, I guess like trait unlocks such as like I don't know like a reload speed reductions or I don't know. Flame belch, you know, extended burn time, but in addition, you'll also get one of two different mods to either your health, ammo, or I can't remember what the other one is, but basically three different stats. Oh, armor. Mm-hmm. So you get one of two different stats per upgrade, so you can kind of choose how you want to build your Slayer out. So you kind of get the ability to customize how you want your Slayer to perform in battles. You can equip up to three traits at a time per build, and you can switch between them at will, which is kind of nice. You can pretty much set the trait system for the style of gameplay you want at the time. And then there's also Slayer Gates, which you can find hidden in certain stages where you find the key, and then you find the Slayer Gate, and when you open it up, you get your ass beat. That's pretty much all there is to that. You get the crap kicked out of you, and it's great. And of course, there's something that you can unlock, and even that you managed to not get your ass kicked multiple times across multiple Slayer Gates, and you'll figure it out for yourself when you get there. But all in all, I mean, I'm curious what you guys think too, but ultimately, I found the game to be a lot of fun. It's very tense, very frenetic, and if another game comes out this year that can top this in regards to just keeping you on your toes gunplay, I will be honestly shocked because I was in it.
I sucked at the game, which isn't surprising because I'm terrible at first person shooters, but goddamn, I was having fun with it. It is a gorgeous game. Like the visuals in this game are insane. Some of the gigantic monsters that you see are just
beautifully
wow.
disgusting.
Yes.
Like one of my favorite moments was when you use a giant ass gun to hit a statue and its demon guts go flying out. And I was just like, fuck yes.
It's a glorious
game. That's what I signed up for. But then it made me go and platform to get in there. And I was like, Jesus.
Well, I will say one last thing I wanted to mention. I totally forgot until now. And I'm curious what you guys think of this, too. So when a lot of my friends would describe Doom 2016, one of their favorite aspects to that game was the fact that there were multiple moments throughout the game where they said that they were trying to hit you with an actual plot, like some sort of narrative to push you along the story. And every time the Doom said, I'd be like, fuck this. And he would just like, shut it up. Like, I don't want to hear this. I'm here to kill things and move forward. And in this game, you actually get the narrative. Like, he doesn't just necessarily shut it all down. He's still very passive about everything, but you're still going to hear him talk, and you're still going to hear the, you know, their plots be, you know, narrated out. Personally, I was fine with that. But as people who have played the previous Doom, is that something that you think would have been like a turnoff for you on the play?
Cole?
I mean,
it was funny in 2016, but I don't know if they want to do it again.
I was reading chat, and I completely missed what he said. I'm sorry.
Jesus, Cole. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it.
I'm here for sorry. You.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
Whatever your opinion was, it was garbage, and we can carry on.
Cole is cold.
For the people asking, no, I didn't throw up while playing Doom. I did start to get a little nauseous, but I powered through it, and I was doing okay.
I didn't puke. I love squelching.
I kind of get that vibe too. Like, I feel like a lot of these like newer FPS games, the movement is so smooth now. There's something about it screws with me until I adjust to it. I'm like,
I had to turn off the gun bobbing though. Like the gun bobbing when you walk.
Oh, that doesn't bother me.
Yeah,
but I had to turn off the film grain because it makes it difficult for me to see important stuff.
Mm. Well, overall, $60 on Doom Eternal. What are you people thinking?
Well, it's snacktacular. Absolutely snacktacular. Worth every penny. I enjoyed it.
Cole, what do you think?
As somebody who played Doom in 1993 and not since, I was really put off by the platforming. Like, if the whole game could have just been combat after combat, just constant onslaught of gory, gross, disgusting enemies, that would have been great. But the moment they made me start jumping for shit, I was a little disillusioned. I'm like, I don't want to go jumping for this shit. I just want to put my big fucking gun in demon faces and pull the trigger.
Oh, is that what that stands for?
But you can do it while you're in the air.
I mean, that's one thing, but having to like grapple on monkey bars like I'm a 3-year-old on the playground is some bullshit.
True. But I could have done without the parkour.
Parkour. But, like a little light parkour is one thing, but they overdid it, and I was just a little disappointed.
Oh, well. All right. Well, next game to talk about is called It'll Do 2 Plus, developed and published by Ludosity. It released March 19th on the Switch for $15 even. It'll Do 2 Plus is a charming 3D action-adventure game with a focus on exploration and combat. Tackle the game's dungeons in any order and discover the many secrets of its expansive overworld. Double plus the fun, bigger, better, puzzlier, and combattier than ever before. Tim, tell us about It'll Do 2 Plus.
I have no frame of reference for how much all those ears that it just added on, those superlatives. No frame of reference. So this is It'll Do 2 getting re-released again on Switch, because it used to be published by Nicolas. They can F right off.
Suck a weenie.
I
miss the old Nicolas. They used to be a good publisher too. Like they used to be really in touch with fans, and they were, you know, they used to let us review their stuff, and then things just changed out of nowhere, and I don't know what happened.
Well, it looks like So you may have heard of this game before. It has literally been released on the Switch before.
Yeah, I reviewed it last time.
Cool, what'd you think?
I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. It's like a game you might be familiar with called Zelda.
What? You know the terrible thing? I played this on Xbox when it came out, and I don't remember jack shit about it. Really? Like, I can remember what it looked like, but I can't remember any of the gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot like Zelda, in my humble opinion. You have like an overhead perspective. Your main character there gets shipwrecked on an island, a island of some mystery. I don't know if it's the most mysterious island in the world, but there's some mystery to it. And to get a new boat, she must piece together a raft, by going into 8 different dungeons, which each contain a piece of said raft. And yeah, it's an overhead perspective. It has like a nice kind of cell shady cartoony look to it. Like everything is very goofy and colorful. Like the dungeon themes, I don't remember the order of them. You can play them in any order. Like sometimes there will be signs telling you like, oh, you don't have the equipment to do this yet. But you know, the first one I believe is the pillow fort. Like that's the theme of it. Is it's a pillow fort, and then the next one is a sand castle. So it's fun stuff like that. And in each dungeon, you will solve some puzzles. You can solve puzzles by hitting switches, killing all the enemies in a room. You will find a special item that you'll need to solve puzzles, and will help you solve puzzles in the overworld. Did I mention this game's a bit like Zelda? Because it is. And that's fine, because there's, you know, not a lot of Zelda-like, Zelda-esque games in the world. Not enough, I'd say. But yeah, you traverse the world. It's very nice and open and forgiving. Like, if you die, it does not send you that far back. I mean, you die in a dungeon, you go back to the entrance, like all your progress is retained. You die in the overworld, it might send you back like a screen or into town, but there's fast travel points. So it's very breezy. It's not there to make your life miserable.
And if you are having a hard time, one of the new features in the 2 Plus is an easy mode where you take less damage.
There you go.
I have to interrupt for a second and say that you said that there's not enough Zelda games out there, and me and Chris both just cried in Decay of Logos.
There's too many.
There's one too many.
One too many.
Yeah, your basic attack in this game is a stick you got to swing around, which I don't feel has the best range or makes the best contact in combat. So I did die quite a bit, but I didn't really care because it didn't knock me back that far. I mean, I guess I was just kind of a little bit more cavalier than anything. But yeah, it's a fun little game. If you're looking for something a little Zelda-esque, a little more chill, a little more relaxed, it's a pretty breezy experience. I mean, like, it's only a few hours long. It is not a super long dozens of hours adventure. Like, I mean, I breezed through three dungeons in, like, my first hour sitting with the game. So, yeah, I think it's worth checking out if you're looking for a bit of a Zelda fix on the Switch, and especially if you like you got a kid you want to start getting hooked on Zelda, which I might, but he's not quite there yet. Yeah, it might be a good place to start.
Rootbeer is my jam is asking if there's a way to switch to the old art style. Did you see any options to switch art styles at all?
Did not. Again, it's my unfamiliarity. No. I didn't know there was an old art style.
I don't remember it looking differently, but it's been a while since I played It'll Do Too. So apparently, yeah. 2 Plus should be coming to other consoles. It's just, you know, it's like one person working on it. So fingers crossed it happens. Some of the other new features of the 2 Plus include collectible cards, which are found in Dream World dungeons. And the Dream World itself is brand new, which is a whole new area with 5 dungeons focusing on puzzles. So the Dream World is all new.
I didn't even realize this was like an update. I thought it was just straight re-release because of I am so uneducated. I'm the worst reviewer. Fire me right after my next review.
Who are you again? Yeah,
it's good stuff. Just get him out of here.
No, you got one more after that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Can't walk away from that one, certainly.
Indeed. But yeah, It'll Do 2 Plus. You liked it?
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah. I think it's worth the 15 bones.
Do you think it's worth the upgrade for Chris, who already has It'll Do 2?
Probably not. Unless you like are a super big It'll Do lover. I don't know how that would work because the old It'll Do was published differently, so you probably couldn't just put a DLC thing on it.
I think they recently released the old It'll Do on Switch, the first game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the actual developer self-published that one.
We got to clean up Nicholas's mess.
After the fact. And that one actually prior had come out on the Wii U as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
slightly older.
Yeah. So they got the first game on there. Now they got the second game on there. I actually am interested in trying out 2 Plus because I might as well. I've got both the digital and physical version of the other release.
You might be a fan.
Yeah. I am a fan. I really enjoyed those games.
They're cool.
Nice. Yeah. All right, well, next game to talk about is called Red Death, developed by Panda Indie Studio, published by East Asia Soft, released March 18th, my birthday, for Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $4.99. Blast through waves of arcane enemies and take down monstrous bosses as you defend the Earth against an unknown calamity. As a prologue to Project Starship, vertical bullet hell shoot-em-up Red Death sets a collision course against a full-scale invasion bent on eradicating humanity, presented in nostalgic four-tone style. Tim, tell us about Red Death.
It's a prologue to what?
Project Starship.
Is that like another game that's coming out?
I am not sure.
Okay.
I didn't do any homework on this one. I just played it.
Oh my god, we are a freaking disaster.
I just played it and got my 1,000 achievement points.
Professional Cornell hasn't
played Doom 2016. Yeah. Don't know what the prologue, what does that mean?
Man, you know how many games there are. This is impossible to keep up.
If people send us games expecting a professional review, that's their fault.
It's a pro-fun review.
Pro-functional.
Pro-functional. Pro-functional and pro-functional.
For the record, I don't care what these fuckers say. I play everything, and I do professional, well-written, articulate reviews.
That's bullshit.
Queen of this shit. I don't ever stutter or stumble or fuck up.
Red Death.
Sound a little made up.
So yeah, Red Death. How's Red Death?
Red Death. It's okay. All right. So yeah, this game is a vertical scrolling shooter, which led me to kind of think for a moment, like, I don't know why so many developers, when they're going to make a classic style shooter, they go with the vertical perspective when, you know, all of our screens nowadays are horizontal. Like, horizontal shooters were a thing. I just played Cider Reloaded like 2 weeks ago. It's a horizontal shooter. Looks great on, you know, the aspect ratio on which screens are presented to us these days. But you get these vertical scrollers where they have to have these big frames on the side to squish things in. And it just, you know, whatever. I like a good shooter one way or another. It was just something that occurred to me as slightly baffling. I don't know. I guess that's just the perspective that won. Either way, Red Death is a vertical scrolling bullet hell shmup. So yeah, it is curtains of bullets that you need to navigate your little itty bitty ship through. The hitbox for your ship. You only are destroyed if a bullet touches the center of your ship. So you have like a little bit of leeway. The hitbox is not the size of the ship, which is, again, that's how these games generally work. It's pretty straightforward. This is a $5 game. When you are presented with the main menu, you have like start game. There's an arcade mode that is crossed out. Something about the controls where it just tells you what the controls are, and then the option to mute the game.
And it is a loud game.
It is a loud game. I mean, I just turn it down because TVs have volume control, so the mute as the sole option the game has to offer seems a little bit of a weird step. So no controller remapping, no difficulty options, no, you know, set up, give yourself infinite lives, infinite continues. No way to mess with the meters in that way. It's just, nope, go in, play the game, fuck you. Speaking of fuck you, the game is like swears a lot in the written text. If this is indeed a prologue, which I guess it is setting up the grand story of whatever this other game is going to be. So when you go into the game, there is a little bit of dialogue when you go into and out of a stage, which, yeah, just unnecessary swearing. Not, I mean, much like this podcast, unnecessary swearing. It just really struck me because, like, when there's written text on a screen, like, I read it to my son if he's watching, and like, when it just said shit in the first line, I was like, whoa, okay, do we need that in this game? And just like F bombs. Yeah,
I didn't realize it was an M-rated game until way after the fact.
Why did you do that? Like, that's probably the only reason it's rated M. Just tone it down, guys. This is my vision. So
don't tell devs what to do.
Oh, I won't. I'll just tell them how I feel.
They create the game that they want to create, and they can say what they want.
Can, and I will tell them how I feel about what they created. And feel they could have toned it down. But whatever, he can't read anyways. Yeah. No harm, no foul, I guess. It was just like, why? Okay. So yeah. Visuals are in a four color, very red style, go figure, as the game is Red Death. I think it looks good. Even, you know, though it is bullet hell and you have like tons of bullets, like, you know, and everything kind of having that same red tone, I didn't have a problem distinguishing my ship or enemy ships or bullets from one another. I think the art style is very good in that respect of keeping things distinct. Sometimes in bullet hell games, you can just get lost between like your shots, the enemy ships, the stuff in the background, the power-ups that are exploding across the screen. But I think they did a good job with that in terms of their art direction. So yeah, when you shoot a ship, the enemy ship will explode into like little star pieces, and you need to collect these star pieces for the sake of score and also for the sake of building up your overload meter. What your ship has in terms of offense, you have your basic shot, which you can power up to a better shot. It just says power when you pick it up, just more powerful. There's a laser weapon, there's a missile weapon. And there is this overload mechanic. And the laser and the overload mechanic are so fucking ridiculously overpowered. Holy shit. My God. Night and day. it just, the laser just cuts through things so hard, especially when it's upgraded to the double laser. And if you build up enough stars to trigger your overload, which maybe will happen once a level, like everything is just going to freaking die. Possibly my biggest problem. No, I would say my biggest problem in this game is it is super punishing when you die. You will death spiral so hard because when you die, you lose your weapon and you just go back down to the basic shot. And man, it is such a world of difference between having a fully powered up double laser or just a single laser and that
single that shot.
Single shot. I mean, like, I cannot, like, bosses, even with the double laser, not doing the overloaded version, which is a triple laser, like, they just melt. They melt, and their bullets, like, disappear. Like, before an attack can hit you, it disappears so the boss can go on to the next phase because you are damaging it so goddamn fast. Like, the bullets will not even get to you because you are sucking down their life so fast. And, yeah, if it's an overload, forget about it. It is so unbalanced. It is ridiculous. I have no idea, like, what they were... What? It's so weird.
It's like playing Gradius using the cheat code, getting far into the game, dying, and then you're like, well, I can't do anything else. I'll just stop here.
Yeah, and that's something that they addressed in later Gradius's... Gradients. And then... your options... Your little satellites would stay on the screen and you could pick them back up. So that way, well, okay, at least you have those things to try to help get you back into shape. Whereas here, it's just like, no, back to zero. And oh, by the way, you're probably going to die a bunch now because your shots don't do any freaking damage. And that's just, I wish it had been better balanced. The laser weapon is, I feel, much better than the other two, though, and overloaded anything will destroy anything that's in front of you. Honestly, I feel like the main reason someone would want to spend $5 for this game is not to have a good time, but to get themselves a super fast, quick and easy 1,000 gamer score. Because, like...
There's an audience for that on Xbox.
There absolutely is, which is why I'm throwing it out there. Because you'll get it in like a half hour. Like the last thing I did was pop 5 overload attacks, but it's really just like shoot enemies, die, kill bosses, not different bosses. It could be stage 1 boss 5 times. Get a high score. That might be the hardest thing because you just kind of have to get through stage 2 for that, but it's not that hard. But it was annoying the first time I started playing the game and going through stage 1 and just achievements are popping up left and right and the notification is blocking where my ship is on the bottom of the screen. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is ridiculous.
They need to go into the settings and alter where that pops because developers can change where the achievements pop. They need to move that up to a corner or something.
And there's plenty of dead space on the screen. The aforementioned vertical scrolly shootery. And then after like a little bit, I was just like, okay, is this why this game exists? Is this what they're doing to get people to buy this game? Just being like an easy 1,000 gamer score? Cause boy, is it. And the game as a shooter is like, okay at best, just because of like, it's so unbalanced. Like the weapons are so balanced. Like the fact that you die and you come back with nothing, like the overload attack takes so long to charge. And if you die, your charge goes back to fucking zero.
Yeah, that's brutal.
So it's just not really a joy to play because of it. Like most bullet hell games that I play and enjoy have some kind of a mechanic for like more actively engaging with the curtains of bullets. It's not just control your ship very precisely to get out of the way of them all, but usually there's some kind of like a shield or barrier or bullet absorption mechanic or bombs to, you know, get yourself out of a sticky situation if you need to. And this has none of that. It just has its overload mechanic, which again, just goes down to zero when you die. And when it gets to 100 and you pop it, it just murders everything. It's just all over the place, but it looks good. I didn't like the music either. That didn't really do anything for me, just in terms of its composition. I didn't think the... Yeah. But...
Chris, yeah. You said you picked it up. Did you have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, what he's saying is pretty accurate. I think it's good, but then again, I have, like, a particular weakness for old-ass, like, Game Boy shmups.
That's very, like, specific.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love shmups of all kinds, that's but, like, fetish. I specifically played a lot of Solar Striker and Nemesis and Sagaya.
Nemesis.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Nemesis is a lot more forgiving because it's got the Konami code that you can just totally re-equip your ship with everything. And, but, you know, like, so it, to me, it reminded me a little bit of, like, a Solar Striker, very bare bones, but more, you know, more of a sophisticated. There's actually this one called Zaz that came out on the Game Boy. It's like it was Japan only, even though it's not like in Japanese or anything like that. It's just, you know, it was a really good looking shooter on the Game Boy, and it kind of reminds me of this game quite a bit. So I'm kind of used to the whole, like, these game, you know, the older game. It's got the unforgiving aspect of, like, those older games, and I sort of appreciate that, but at the same time, those games never become, like, my favorites. The ones that are just, like, totally not forgiving. And then shout-outs to the soundtrack on this game. I actually quite liked it.
Oh, okay.
So you liked it. Tim didn't like it.
That's okay. Yeah. Different strokes.
Different folks. All right, well, $5 on it. What do you think, Tim?
Like,
Achievement hunters will buy it.
That's pretty much, like, I don't find it that, I mean, I don't think, as a shooter, it did not grab me. But yeah, if you're an achievement hunter, then spend those $5. If you're really thirsting for a shooter, it is only $5, but,
and it might still be on sale. I think it launched at $4. So you might be able to get it on sale.
Yeah, anything. Yeah, so, but otherwise, you're not going to miss out on anything here.
All right. Well, Tim, we'll let you get going. Thank you for joining us and hanging out with us.
It was
us.
A pleasure.
Always good having you here. I guess we'll see you either next week or the week after. Not sure how much time you need for your next big review.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That is a week away. That seemed so much further when I got it. What is time right now? Is tomorrow Wednesday?
Was Tuesday. Like, my Tuesday routine is wake up and immediately check what the Rock Band DLC for the week is, because they announce it Tuesdays at 10. I didn't check the Rock Band DLC until, like, right before the show, because I forgot it was Tuesday.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, my concept of time has just been tossed out the window. My daily schedule now with not going into work and just being at home with a child. Every day is a weekend, but no, it's also not. So I'm already lost. We'll see where I'm at next week. It's a long game. All right.
Well, any final words before we let you go?
No, I don't. I'm just going to go teeping.
Have a good night, Tim.
Good night.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Freedom Finger, developed and published by Wide Right Interactive. It released March 24th on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99. Freedom Finger is a music-driven side-scrolling shooter that sends you blasting across 40 levels of crazy cartoon action, starring Nolan North, John DiMaggio, Eric Bauza, and Sam Riegel, featuring music by Aesop Rock, Red Fang, Mets, Power Trip, Danimal Cannon, and many more. Cole, tell us about Freedom Finger.
First off, none of those names meant a thing to me.
You should know Danimal Cannon. We play Danimal on the show a lot.
I wouldn't recognize
him. I know that guy.
Danimal is good people.
But it's just, I don't know. It doesn't strike me. I think it's supposed to somehow be like the saving grace of the game that is over the top offensive and ridiculous. It's steeped in American exceptionalism, which, you know, is funny. don't get me wrong. Your rocket ship is a giant hand flipping the bird. Okay.
Yeah. You have the ability. I can't wait. By the way, we're going to have an interview with these guys next episode. So.
This should be interesting. You play as a hero named Gamma Ray. Your foul-mouthed militant sergeant gives you a whole lot of bad advice and leads you to do things like, I don't know, blow up fucking Russian space satellites because you're trying to stop the Chinese terrorists. Let's just maybe say that the timing on this game's a little shady.
Yeah, it's a rough patch to have a game about evil Chinese terrorists. It's just like the game was made a long time ago. Like, this is not a brand new release. The timing is just really fucking crazy.
It's unfortunate. That said, I mean, I don't know that the timing would have changed anything with this game anyway, because it takes like a South Park approach in that it just kind of makes fun of everybody to the point of just defending everybody.
Which I love, by the way.
That's just my kind of humor. A lot of people are okay with that humor. I can be a little hit or miss on it, but I knew what I was getting into, so I can't really be like, when I knew that's what the game was. I think we had talked about it before in a previous interview. I don't remember which interview it was, but the one developer was like, oh, this was an incredible game. And we just thought it was over the top weird. And it is. And it's, I mean, I bordered on whether to say, oh, it's like satirical. I can't even say it. or if it's just taking pot shots at everybody with its jokes. There's some stuff that is very under the radar, racist and sexist, that a lot of bigger games would get their shit kicked in for. I think it probably gets away with some of it because it's an indie. it's just a South Park level of humor. And it's fine. Like I said, some people are into it. Others aren't, but at least you should know it going into it. If that's not your thing, you might want to avoid it.
I mean, the game is about a flying middle finger. If that doesn't set off some alarms.
It definitely lets you know what it is out of the gate. So it's a little hard to be like, over it, you know, because like I said, I knew what it was going into it. But I also feel like I have to say it in the review and let people know, because maybe they don't get that it's a big giant fuck you to literally everything. Some people are really not good with symbolism. But this game is a giant fuck you to everything. And at times it can be pretty humorous. Other times it kind of misses the mark for me. But, you know, personal preference. Gameplay wise, though, I had a lot of fun with it. I mean, you're piloting a spaceship shaped like a fist, giving a middle finger to everything you come across. It's really hard not to have at least a little bit of fun in that situation. Okay,
you shoot out of the middle finger. Just pew, pew, you, pew, 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 pew.
Yeah, the middle finger is your gun, and it shoots, and that's great. But then you also have the ability to just punch shit. And then you've also got the ability to just grab shit and throw it back. And you're just like, I don't want to be shot by this little pea shooter of a gun. So you, or chip, and you just grab it. And then you go, you can either press X and shoot that ship's weaponry, or you just throw it and see what the fuck it takes.
You can throw a motherfucker at a motherfucker.
It's incredible, and I'm like there's so much good in the gameplay. It makes it hard to be like, this is a horrible game because it's sexist and offensive, and which is what I would normally do. but it's fun to play. I mean, if you mute it all and just shoot shit, great.
Or if the humor just jives with you, because the humor clicked with me. I thought this game was hilarious. I was laughing my ass off. Like, every time a cutscene would pop up, one of my letdowns with the cutscenes is that they're only partially voiced. It would have been nice if everything was fully voiced, but I guess limitations. I don't know if story changed after things were
also
recorded.
Maybe some of those people didn't want certain lines in their voice forever out
possible.
There.
Very possible. The music and insane soundtrack. Awesome music in the game.
Yeah.
I love the visuals. Great hand-drawn art style.
I did love the art style. And I think that's, again, what fell into just making it fun. I mean, it looked good. And you enjoyed what you were doing, even if everything else might have been a little questionable.
Yeah. Well, 15 bucks on it. What do you think of it?
Is the price really that high?
$14.99.
I would have thought it would have been more around the $10 range, but I think it can swing it. There is quite a few levels. It's a pretty lengthy game for a shmup. So, yeah, it can probably swing the price tag. I'm gonna go with a try it, but merely because it's just not gonna be humor that everybody's gonna attach to.
Yeah, I agree fully.
Know what you're playing going into it.
Yeah, I agree fully. I personally give it a very recommended try. The only reason I don't give it a buy it is because it's not for everyone humor wise. The more sensitive people are going to want to avoid this game. But seriously, if you look at a game about a flying middle finger and you buy it thinking it's going to be wholesome and good for the family, you fucked up.
I don't think it's got to be wholesome, but maybe you don't have to like go full racist with it either. Like, there's a happy medium in the world out there somewhere. But
also awesome is the fact that Root Beer Is My Jam just subbed for 11 months now.
Root Beer!
And before the show started, Suda subbed too.
Suda did because I texted him and told him to do it. I was like, bitch, give us your money.
Oh, man. All right. Well, the next game to talk about is called Epic Word Search, developed and published by Lightwood Games, released March 19th on Switch, PS4, and Vita for $7.99. I'm still waiting for Lightwood to get on the Xbox train. I'm going to bug him until it happens.
Write him a letter. We got their home address.
True. That is true. Epic word search puzzles are enormous. There are more than 1,500 words hidden in each massive scrollable grid. Chris, tell us about Epic word search.
Okay, well, they really went and did it this time. All right, so Epic word search is a game. Well, of course, it's the classic word search, which is just a jumble of letters in which you are supposed to find and circle a word, right? Mm-hmm. I used to... you know, I never even liked comic books as a kid. I used to beg my mom to buy me word search books. So, huge fan of the genre. I don't know what it is. It's just so fun and simple. Anyways, I was really excited about this one. So, this game, the entire game, is four puzzles.
Wow.
They're broken up into categories. I'm trying to look at the categories right now. Yeah, like food search, journeys, word search, animals, and sports. And so the way that they decided to do this is that, you know, the classic puzzle is about maybe about 30 to 40 letters by 30 to 40 letters. And, you know, all the words are contained therein. Usually it's about, you know, 40, 50 words or something. This one does that, sort of. But the thing is that they decided to just link all the puzzles together in a 4x4 grid. So each puzzle itself will have something like 92 words in it, right? Like anywhere between late 80s to early 110s. Something like that. And then 92 words, let's say. Well, that's one puzzle. And then they have the next one linked directly to it where puzzles actually cross, words actually cross the puzzles and things like that. And then they do that four times across for a total of 16. So yes, you end up with like these giant ass puzzles that have something like 1500 words in them.
Damn.
The way they have them organized is interesting because, okay, so you know how each word search puzzle, of course, has the list of words that are in there that you're supposed to find and then cross off, you know?
Yeah.
So this one changes the word list dynamically with what letters are on the screen at that moment. So if one letter
is cool.
Yeah. So if one letter of the word pandesal or, you know, delicata or tomatillo is, you know, if one of those letters of one of those words is somewhere on the puzzle, that word will be on the list. And as soon as you scroll the puzzle, you can use either stick, by the way, to scroll the puzzle. And I'll get back to that in a second. If you scroll the puzzle enough where now, you know, there's no longer that word, then it will go off and then the rest will populate. Yeah, it's really, really interesting because it not only becomes a thing of word search, it becomes kind of an almost battleship type thing where you're like, okay, so the word tomatilla, I'm not seeing it. Tomatillo is not here, so I'm not seeing it. It could be that most of the letters are out of the screen, so I'm just going to keep scrolling around until it disappears, and then I can use that to kind of zero in on where it might be.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great element to it, and I actually found that to be like, you know, for a game that's so simple, that's such a cool little like feature that I don't think I've ever seen before. And of course, if you aren't into all that extra challenge, they have a very a very good hint system. Basically, you push the Y button and it just highlights the first letter of any of the next word, and so you can just find it from there. It's basically an answer book. So I try to avoid that, of course, as much as possible. And yeah, so, and you know, they do a good job too of like changing the colors of the letters, based on what puzzle it is. And the words that are going to populate on the list will have the same color as the puzzle where you'll find at least the first letter. So, you know, if crisp bread or fugaz or indica rice is, I'm in the food puzzle, obviously, you know, all those are in the blue section. So as you know, the first letter is going to be in the blue section, even though all the other letters might be like in the red section or something like that. So that's really, it's quite cool. The soundtrack is interestingly, classical music played on piano, like actual classical music, like, you know, pieces that you'll recognize.
All right.
I don't think there's any original music in the game, but that's fine. It's word search. There's a soundtrack because, you know, they felt obligated. So there's one more thing about it, basically, and that is that, like I said, the you can scroll through and highlight each letter by, like, moving either... Well, okay, let me start over. The left stick moves the cursor of the letters, like, you know, so you can select one and you hold down the A button to, like, you know, highlight the rest of the letters, and then you know, you can get your puzzle that way. And then the right stick actually just advances the puzzle without moving the cursor. Well, either one of them, if you actually touch the screen, it will go into touchscreen mode, and then both sticks will actually advance the puzzle without highlighting anything. And so you can actually have this system where you can scroll through the puzzle and then just with your finger or a stylus be like highlighting the letters. And I found that to be much, much easier to play than, you know, the original way. And that's actually going to be a theme through all the games I'm reviewing today. They're all touchscreen games, actually. You're trying to get me to make my Switch sick. But yeah, so it's really handy. Like the puzzles are really good. The overview system where you can actually look at the entire grid and it will tell you the percentage of letter of words that you found in each segment of the puzzle. And they also have a total, like, they also have like a total score back in the main screen. And of course you can access any of the puzzles at any time. So, you know, if you get tired of the food search, you can go into the journey search and, you know, etc., which actually I was doing a lot of that from the other reviews. The one thing that's interesting, though, and this is a rare instance here, people who are left-handed are actually at an advantage if they want to play this game with the touchscreen, because the actual field of letters is on the left side of the screen, whereas the list of words is on the right side of the screen, and you can't switch them. So if you're over here with your right hand, you're covering up the list of words. Yeah. So it's like everything else is for left-handers, but for right-handers.
So Lightwood needs really an option to swap which side the list is on.
Literally the feedback. The only thing I would say about this game or any of its type going forward is to swap the screen and do that for games that favor right-handed people too. If you're going to make a touchscreen specific game, you know, keep both handedness in mind. It doesn't take away from the game, but that's just feedback.
Yeah.
Well, really, really liked it.
$8 on it. What do you think?
Yeah, it's easily worth $8, but you know what of Lightwood games isn't?
Very true.
They always put out quality, so I definitely recommend it.
So, Lightwood, Xbox, what's going on?
Yeah.
Waiting here.
Please.
All right, next game to talk about is called War Tile, developed by Playwood Project, published by Deck 13, released March 24th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. Experience a living, breathing tabletop video game that invites the player into a miniature universe full of small adventures set in beautifully handcrafted diorama battle boards inspired by Norse mythology to honor the Vikings. Purnell, tell us about War Tile. Purnell?
Oh my god.
Did we lose Purnell? Oh, shit. Purnell.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Oh, there you are. Oh,
Purnell fell asleep.
I totally fell asleep. And you know the weirdest part? I was thinking of Animal Crossing for some reason.
Do our reviews bore you, Purnell?
No, I'm just really tired or something.
I will admit that I do have one of my friends playing Animal Crossing on the other tab.
I was like watching him. I was like, when I feel as though I'm tired, I'll watch Animal Crossing. It's going and moving.
Well, Purnell, tell us about War Tile.
Well, War Tile, unlike me, is a wait. War Tile is an interesting little like tabletop-esque strategy game where you manipulate an army of units across a map to fulfill some function and complete the stage. Now, this plays a little differently from your typical, like, what would be considered as a, I guess, a strategy RPG, in that, well, the strategy in this game isn't what you're used to. It's more of a real-time gameplay. So what happens is every character and every unit is represented as a, like a statue, like a figurine, statuette. And at the beginning of a level, you'll be given a series of objectives you need to complete or that you would like to complete. And then your character figurines will get placed on the map. And then the game begins. When you press to move your unit from one spot to the next, he'll jump to the new spot. And then he has like a bit of a cooldown before he can move again. You can preemptively decide where you want him to go. But until the cooldown expires, he won't move. And honestly, the cooldown itself isn't even a big deal. You move units around this game pretty swiftly and smoothly. Whenever you come across an enemy unit, as long as they are in your field of attack range, they'll just start attacking automatically. So it's just sort of like a matter of like get the enemy in, you know, get your player into position and go to town on mauling. Just a lot of combat. So that's how you end up doing all the normal fighting. Now, due to the moving by command and then to having them drop in and everything moving in real time, that's the first thing that's interesting about this game. The second thing is all of your abilities are dictated by cards. So you start out with what's called, you earn it as you go throughout the game, but you'll have something called a battle deck. Each battle deck that you have in the game consists of 5 cards, which you can use on each map when you start it. You get new battle cards by fulfilling objectives on the stages and getting high enough scores to unlock new battle cards on levels. And the way these work is they're very much like your special abilities. You get 3 cards that are played in the match that come from your deck, and then 1 card for each of the units that are in play in the game. So let's say, for example, you want to use like poison. I'm making this up. It's not in the game. Something called poison point. It can be represented by a card. You select it from your battle deck, pay the required resource cost that you have to spend to use the ability, and then you just pretty much, that's it. So it ends up being an interesting mechanic where you're trying to figure out when is the right time to use special abilities to get the drop on enemies and give yourself an upper hand. And when you're not in an actual map, there are a few screens that you're able to access to prepare for the next one. There's a tavern where you can spend gold that is earned from the gameplay sessions to purchase new character figurines that will play on the maps. Now, these character figurines, fairly cheap, but and there's a number of them that already show up in the tavern when you first show up, but until you unlock them, you can't actually purchase them. There's the next screen where, I guess you can see it's sort of like a, I don't think it even has a location name, it's just a scenario where you can unlock, you can equip your characters with loot that you found on the stages, be a treasure chest or purchase from a store. Now, in addition to just giving them like helmets and weapons and armor, there are also tokens. Tokens are unlocked as you complete stages and defeat enemies, and they represent stat buffs that you can give individual units. You equip the tokens and get the stat buffs. Take them off at will if you like, but for the most part, you just kind of set them up and you're good to go. It's a good way to kind of make each character your character, despite them having default stats, including whatever stats they get when they level up. Then the next screen, of course, is the deck construction. Same thing, you go through your deck of battle cards, choose the three you want to take on the next map, and move on, roster, and repeat. And lastly, the deployment screen, where you have a boat, you place the units that you want to maneuver into the game onto the boat, have a maximum of 5 fit on the boat, but depending on the stage, you might have a max there too. All in all, I found myself kind of enjoying this game. I wish the music was a little bit more lively, because as you can tell from the beginning of this review, I get tired easily. and the music in this game is very, like, atmospheric, maybe a little bit on the Celtic side, but it's very atmospheric, more relaxing than tense. Though, I mean, that's what they were going for. I give them that. It's good music. It's just tiring. It got me a little tired, except for the occasional where I get ambushed by some jerks and I feel like I want to get my ass handed to me. So the music kind of, you know, just kind of gets supersedes, like, whatever, just fight.
I do want to thank you real quick for pointing out that you fell asleep at the beginning of the review, because I was going to edit that out, but now that you mentioned it, I have to keep it.
You need to keep it. It's hilarious.
And that saves work for me.
Yeah, buddy. It's totally okay. This. I don't sleep enough. We all know this. It's just now come to show.
Well, $20 on War Tile. What are you thinking of it?
If you're a fan of tabletop games, I think this is right up your alley. It's a lot of fun. Difficulty ramps up when you choose different difficulties on stages, which yields better rewards, so you can kind of edit it to your liking. It's a fantastic little game that I wasn't expecting to be as cool as it is. I like it.
Nice. All right. Next game to talk about is called Mecha-Rama, developed by Martin Magni and Rattleika Games, published by Rainy Frog. Released March 26th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Vita for $4.99. Guide the adorable robot B, because he looks like a bee, to safety after he crash lands on a strange cubic planet. Explore each level, rotating it in 3D to see all sides, looking for a way to reach the goal. 100 varied levels continuously throws up new surprises that you'll never know what to expect. Chris, tell us about Mecha-Rama.
All right, Mecha-Rama. So, I was just actually looking at the developer, and I'm like looking at all these games I've reviewed for them. Because, yeah, I think I've gotten like 3 from them so far.
Anyway. From Rattleika? Rattleika is mostly a publisher.
No, I mean specifically Rainy Frog.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like just their games through Rattleika. But, yeah, I know, we do like 1,000 Rattleika games. It's great. So yes, this one in particular. So this is a game where you basically, you know, you guide your guy or guys, to safety, like to the, to like a little, like, it's kind of like a laser beam sort of thing, like just an exit point basically. And, the whole thing is basically you touch the screen or select like with a cursor that, that appears, you know, with the left stick. Either way, and you tell him where to go, and then he goes. Now, of course, there's going to be either obstacles in the way or, like, you know, a hole or something like that. Basically, you know, different things, and a lot of them will have touch points on them, and then you can move the cursor over there and either, you know, drag them up or over or, you know, manipulate them in some way so that your character can get across or through or something like that. Yeah, there you go. And wow, weird. That's like the first level that it showed on your screen there was the exact level I was on, like just messing around.
Nice.
Anyways, And yeah, your whole point is to get to that end. And as you can see, those ones with the circles on them, those are the manipulatable blocks. And while at first it's like easy stuff, like, you know, you raise it or lower it to make bridges or something like that, it eventually gets to where they actually have constructed like these large, these like mechanical things that like interlock, and like moving one thing moves a whole bunch of things, or like you have to rotate everything in like a certain way. It gets really advanced and pretty interesting. And you could, of course, can like go through all these different levels, which are arranged on pages that you can scroll through, like actually flipping a book and pulling out a card, which I think is actually a pretty cool little system. And they go from easy levels all the way up to, you know, medium, tricky, and hard. And then there's another option where you can actually make your own level. They give you all the assets, and you could just build whatever you want.
That is awesome. I love when games do that.
Yeah, it's really cool. And so since they draw from about 12 to 14, I don't exactly know the number, but like there's a limited amount of like different resources that they pull from. So everything kind of has this predictable quality to it. Like, you know, that if you see a block with circles on it, that's what you can touch, you know. And the way the game moves physically is actually really interesting, because like if you get your little Eggman too close to a platform and you move the platform too fast, you could actually accidentally knock him out of the entire screen and then have to restart. So apart from that, there's usually not any like danger for the character. And in fact, there's no timer either. So it's very much a thing where you can sit there and kind of mull it over and like think about what you want to do, and, you know, rotate the stage like all you want, and like, you know, look as much as you want at everything, and, you know, kind of plot your path. So the interesting thing here is, again, this is a game that works so much better when you get your hands dirty and, do the touchscreen mode rather than the player mode. Because although it does have, it's pretty dynamic on like, you know, on some level, like, you know, you, like I said, the stick moves the cursor around, and the shoulder buttons like rotate the stage and things like that. When it actually comes to interacting with the pieces, like they respond so well to actual touch, whereas I feel like they don't respond quite as well to when you're dragging them and like moving the cursor around, because, you know, there's certain types of movements that you kind of can't make with a joystick, that you can easily make with your finger. And for that reason, like, I actually had like twice as much fun with this game when I was using it in handheld mode than when I was playing it on the TV. Having said, yeah, the game is pretty no-nonsense. I mean, you know, they don't throw anything in there that's like impossible or anything. Well, I haven't seen the hardest levels, so I may be speaking too soon there. But what I'm saying is that it's very accessible. It's very easy to understand. And each time you see a puzzle, you're just like, oh, this is interesting. And, you know, you start messing around with it, and you don't have to like feel the pressure of like, you know, a wall of spikes coming at you or, you know, anything like that. It's nice and relaxing, and it, you know, it feels more like a classic puzzle, like a real puzzle, than something that, you know, more like that than like a video game. Like, it feels like if this thing existed and you were messing with it with like in the real world, like it would totally feel the same.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, $5 on Mecharama. What do you think?
Yeah, this is easily quality, and $5 is a good reason to buy it. Like I said, this is for people who like to sit there and think and fiddle with it rather than, you know, try to blast through at the, you know, it, like I said, it doesn't have any way of scoring. It just, you either beat the level or you didn't.
Yeah. And, we reviewed this on Switch, so we don't know what the Xbox achievement list is going to look like. But,
Yeah.
With Radaleika involved, it could be a possible easy completion. We'll find out when the achievement list goes live.
Right. Yeah, that's, you know, but I will say that, yeah, you do actually have to beat like a certain amount of levels to unlock a certain amount of other levels and things like that. So you can't just play any stage. So you do actually have to progress through the game. And that's about all I'll say about the difficulty curve, is that you can't just jump into the hardest stuff immediately. But yeah, $5, worth it.
Awesome. All right. Next game to talk about is called Trial of the God Cyrilum CCG, developed by Thylacine Studios and Jay's Games, published by Thylacine Studios, released March 13th on Steam for $12.99. Trial of the Gods is a collectible card game based in the world of Cyrilum. Collect over 100 creature cards with unique traits and use them to battle against the gods. Features a lengthy campaign with two difficulty modes along with randomly generated post-game content. Purnell, if you're awake, tell us about this one.
That only works once. It's triple try it.
Okay. $13, what'd you say?
Honestly, I'll talk about the game proper, but I would say buy it. But before even doing that, it really is triple try it, but I mean that in the most sincere way possible, because for those who don't know me, which may be everyone, I'm a big fan of triple try it. And it's gotten to the point where, like, I was actually looking for alternatives to Triple Triad, including a card game I bought called Cell Swords, which is pretty much Triple Triad.
For the people who don't know, Triple Triad is the card game from Final Fantasy VIII.
That is correct, sir. And now I think about it, I guess that would be a part of what the game description will be about. For those who don't know Triple Triad, even beyond Joe's description, the way the gameplay would work is that you're on a board that usually consists of... Let's just say 5x5 grid. I could be off slightly by the dimensions, but 5x5 grid. And in each spot, you can place a card from your hand. Now, these cards, usually you have about 6 of them total, represent a variety of different monsters. And the things that make the traits that every card has are an element, in which case there's a strength and weakness related to them, but I'll get that in a second. There is an ability that will come into play when the card is played. And also 4 numbers, one on each corner that represents the card's strength in that area. So let's say, for example, I have a squid, and the squid has 4, 3, 2, and 1. Strongest at the 4, weakest at the 1. And when you place the card down, you are hoping that you can hold the terrain and not have your card taken by the next player, because they will also play a card. And if they play a card adjacent to the one you played and the number touching the side of the other card is greater than your card, it will be taken. Now, unlike in Triple Triad, however, in this game, if the number is just greater than the opposing monster's number, it will just make it, it'll make that monster neutral. It's like saying, hey, snap out of it. You're not on the other player's team anymore. You're on no one's team, which means now the next turn is ripe for the taking from anybody who can beat one of the remaining available sides. However, if you double, or rather, if you beat the number on the side by more than twice its amount, it's considered an overkill, and then you immediately take it and claim it for your team. So, also, when I mentioned earlier about the weaknesses, the strengths and weaknesses on elements, if you match a card against another whose element is stronger than that one, its card size, or the numeric value that's being compared, is increased by 1. So, if it was 5, it's now a 6. So sometimes you'll be holding on to cards knowing that eventually the opponent's going to play a specific monster that you want your monster to beat, and then bam, you got him. Now, the funny thing about it is, gameplay-wise, I literally just described the entire game, because ultimately you play all 6 of your tiles, and at the end of the match, whoever has the most claimed tiles wins it. But for as simple as that is, it's still a lot of fun, and essentially, matches go so fast that you'll honestly want to play more, and you'll want to see all the different cards you can unlock so you can build the perfect deck. And you'll unlock those cards by playing through the campaign mode. Campaign mode consists of a variety of different stages that you can play. And each of those stages, or because I could call them campaigns, consists of about 5 stages. You go to each level, you'll battle an opponent. Sometimes there's a condition in play. Sometimes it's just most of the time it's just free flow, no rules or anything. And sometimes when you win those matches, you'll get treasure. The treasure will be usually a new card. Also, every time you win a level, you get experience points. And for every 1,000 experience points, you level up. When you level up, what do you get? A card. Yeah, it's cool, right? More cards. So you're basically just incentivized. It's just another way to say, hey, play a bunch of matches, unlock a bunch of cards to reconstruct your deck, to play a bunch of matches, get a bunch of cards, play a few matches, and just wash and repeat ad nauseum forever. And that's totally fun. Absolutely fun. If you know what you're getting into when you buy this game, which you should if you're listening to this review, you should know that this is all you're getting out of it. But if that's what you wanted, like I would have wanted, then it's worth the cash. Again, I bought CellSource. CellSource cost me $20. It's a physical game. And all it is Triple Dryad. Literally. And I was fine with that. And this is a fair bit cheaper than that. And there's a lot
triple
of content.
Triple Dryad with a campaign. That sells it to me because I love Triple Dryad.
Right.
Anyway, the grid in this one is 4x4, not 5x5.
Thank you. See, because I'm like, I don't even remember what the grid size is. No, I was kicking ass on that grid.
You dick.
That's right. Smashing.
Purnell, $13 on this. What do you think?
I think it's a solid buy if you're a fan of Final Fantasy Games Triple Triad game or Tetramaster, I guess. I think that was 9. But if you are not familiar with that and you are intrigued by what I just said, it's a definite try it because I have hope and faith that you'll enjoy it. You should because great game.
Awesome. All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called War Room, developed by Michael... I don't know how to pronounce this name. R-F-D-S-H-I-R. Anybody got a clue?
I can't even read it in the game's font, so I don't know.
I don't know how to pronounce R-F-D.
Maybe the D is silent. Ropper.
Urshir? Michael Urshir?
I think that was R-F-D.
Yeah, R-F-D.
Rift. Oh, crap. Now it is wrong. I was mispronouncing an entirely different word. Never mind.
Yeah, so developed by Michael Rashir, we'll go with that, and Serge Boulat, published by Sometimes You. It's releasing April 1st on the Switch and Vita for 99 cents. Experience a 10-minute dive into the unknown depths of the multiverse. You are just a hand lost in the undefined hyper wonderland where visions, thoughts, and ideas from your subconscious intermix with the fragments of other inexperienced worlds. Chris, what the hell is this game?
I mean, experience, or
whatever it is.
It's an interactive art piece, really. I would totally expect such a pretentious like description to be applied to this game, you know. And yes, let's just call it Bjork. It's a Bjork game.
Michael Bjork.
Yeah, Michael Bjork. Okay, so War Room, Refinisher. I don't know.
Maybe
you're supposed to read it. Maybe you're supposed to like remove a letter, or maybe it's an anagram.
Maybe.
Anyway, so when you start this game up, it lets you know that this game could be played in handheld mode. It's like, warning, this game could be played in handheld mode. What they mean is that it can only be played in handheld mode. This game only uses the touchscreen. It uses no other anythings. It in fact doesn't have any kind of like save progress, no options, menus, anything like that. It's just when you start the game up, it starts and you play it until it is done, or until you leave. Yeah, and it starts off with a darkened room and a head made out of like some kind of iridescent clay and a shovel and a hand. And basically the way, you know, when you touch the shovel, then the shovel is in the hand, and then you drag the shovel over to the head, stick the shovel in the head, and, you know, the head wakes up and looks around and stuff, and then something starts undulating on the ground, and you're supposed to grab that with the hand, and so forth and so on. Basically, things happen in the game. It's all done in this very claymation style with, like, a lot of emphasis on just, like, what looks like clay spaghetti. Just looks like somebody used like a Play-Doh playset and just like squished a bunch of stuff out and just made random abstract shapes out of it. And your job is basically to just double click on, or, you know, I always double click. I think you're supposed to double click. I never could tell because sometimes it doesn't respond to you the first time. But you basically just click on everything until something else happens. And there's not really any puzzles to solve. Like, there's kind of like... you know, sometimes you have to figure out what you're supposed to click, but there's not like an order to it or anything. It's just like pixel searching kind of thing. Hmm. You know, in that sense, I guess it's kind of like more of a point and click than anything. You know, in one particular stage, where there's like some platforms and stuff, it's like when you move a platform, it causes your hand to turn into a bunch of like dots, and you know, you're supposed to figure out that you're supposed to drag the palm around and collect the fingers again before you move the platform back. But then once you do that, things start happening automatically. It's like stuff like that. It's basically you just kind of play around with it and click on stuff, and eventually it just ends. And then you're told congratulations, and then it starts over. And that's it.
All right. 99 cents. Is it worth it?
I think it's worth it if you appreciate abstraction and surrealism, and just like the art of, like, clearly somebody who's talented at coming up with surreal and abstract imagery. It's just art that, like, moves as you interact with it, and as long as you don't expect like an actual game out of it, then sure, it's worth it. But apart from that, it's not a game, it's interactive art. And like I said, the gameplay is literally just tapping on the screen until you're done, and it does really take, like, I would say the maximum that it would take to figure this entire game out would be 20 minutes.
Wow.
But I almost completed all of it while Purnell was doing his last review. So, I was right near the end, and then it the review ended, and I had to start over. So, you know, it's weird. It's pretty. It's kind of, well, it's pretty in its own way. It's not like conventionally good art. It's just, like I said, it's for people who appreciate surreal and abstract stuff more so than like brilliant colors or like anything remotely resembling something realistic.
No.
Like, so you
this
don't
is
really
a weird
see,
one.
It's a weird one, yeah. And I mean, like, weird in the sense that it's not even dealing with like strange things that you recognize. Like, you might recognize a face or a shoe or something like that, but apart from that, it's like mostly just abstract shapes. So, you know. It's one of those things where you just look at it and see if it looks interesting, and that'll determine whether it's worth 99 cents to you.
Sounds good.
But, yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. That is all the games that we are here to talk about. Thanks to all of you for being here, hanging out, keeping me company. Thanks to Tim for being here as well. Cole, you still alive over there?
Stop stealing my bit!